Hold on a second. Come on, mister.
You ready?
Yes.
Okay. This will be a commutation hearing for Mr. Durham. First of all, would you state, I mean, this is a pardon for Mr. Durham. Would you state your name for the record, sir?
Nicholas Durham.
And since this is for a pardon, we don't ask for an ADC number. That's not necessary. We want to take this opportunity to welcome you today and to apologize for your having to spend the day with us. But we're always honored to have guests in the room with us, so thank you so very much. I'm just going to make a few comments, and then we're just going to listen to you. We just want to get to know you, and we just want to get to know why you want a pardon, and what this would do for you, and then the board will make its determination. I would say up front, just for the record, as you know, the board does not make that decision. The board will, if the board sees fit, it will make a recommendation to the governor. Mm-hmm. And the governor is the only one in the state of Arizona who can issue a pardon. So I did want to just put that on the record, and we just want to, you know, get to know you. We want to go all the way back, and then you can explain all of this, because I'm just going to make just a few comments, and then I'm just going to turn it over to you, sir. Just based on some of the things that I have reviewed, I believe, and my dates may be off a little bit, and everything may be off just a little bit, but the offense itself, according to information that I gleaned, was several. One was March 8, 1999, and that's when you and your co-defendant broke into a vehicle. And at that time, you did not steal anything. And on February 26, 1999, you also broke into a vehicle. At that time, you stole some gold golf clubs and to buy drugs. I believe at that time, you ended up with maybe about $200 to buy meth. You had a methamphetamine habit at that time, and you were spending about $200 per day on the methamphetamine during that period. I also believe that in 2004, you applied for unemployment benefits, and at the time you were employed at that particular time, and that you had received about $2,050 regarding that, and you were recommended for a two-year term suspended probation and 150 hours of community service. So far, is that information correct or incorrect, or please straighten it out where it's not correct, sir?
That's pretty correct, yes.
Okay, sir. The other thing that I would just point out, and as I say, you can elaborate on it just in a few minutes, is that if I read it correct, your rights were restored around April 19, 2016, and you do have your civil rights, a right to possess an arm in the state of Arizona. And their charges were dismissed in the state of Arizona. Is that correct,
yes,
sir?
Correct, yes.
I want to commend you for that. And in terms of employment, you were employed at a church. In fact, you were an assistant pastor there at the church, and you do a great deal of work there at the church. So rather than go back a little later to the offense itself, but tell us now what you do at the church, sir.
I'm the maintenance supervisor currently. I worked there. I got hired on. I worked for the union for a lot of years, building casinos and all that. And then we started attending church there. And they had a need for they call it a TI, a tenant improvement. So they bought this building, and they wanted to know if I would come in and remodel the whole building as a church. And so I did that, and they liked me, my work ethic, and they liked me so much they offered me a full time position. And so, which I accepted, and been there ever since. And was probably, I think, going on 5 years now, I felt the call of God on my life, and pursued, you know, being a pastor. Went through just a barrage of interviews, sort of like this in a way. But now that's history. And now I'm serving people in my church and my community. And one of the things that I enjoy the most is we have a ministry called Celebrate Recovery. And I've met many people, because, you know, I've been through the drug scene, you know, breaking the law and all the stupid things I did. But I want to use that to minister to upcoming, you know, young men and women who are maybe deciding to go down that path themselves. And I want to use my life as a testimony to maybe, you know, veer them from that path. If I can show them, you know, where it's going to lead and what their life's going to be like if they pursue that path, then it'll be worth it.
And at the beginning, I did not introduce the board members because you've been here all day, so I think you probably know them now better than I do. You have the Honorable Mr. Louis Kiwanis, the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson, the Honorable Mr. David Neal, and my name is C.T. Wright. I'm board chair and serving as panel chair. We also have in the room with us Mr. Osborne. Mr. Osborne represents the Department of Corrections as well. Well, you don't need him for parole officer for you because you're not on parole, but I just wanted just to go on record to let you know who was who's here with you today. So where's the church located, sir?
It's in Henderson, Nevada.
Okay.
Green Valley area.
And that's where you reside,
mm-hmm.
sir? And how long have you resided there in Henderson, Nevada, sir?
We've been there now, so 12 going on 13 years, 12 years now.
Oh, okay.
In 2005 in July,
yes, sir. We
moved there for work.
Sir, so what are your future plans as it relates to the church? Because you're an important part of that church, is based on the reason that I did as it relates to you. So what are your plans?
Yeah, it's been a blessing. It's really been a blessing working there. Our plans, we really feel the call of God to plant churches, and so my wife and I, we want to, you know, glean as much as we can from all our senior pastors, you know, and learn the. Yeah, there's a business side to it. It's, you know, it's a ministry, but you know, you keep the lights on and all that kind of stuff. You got to run it as a business. So we're learning all that, and we're not sure where God's going to take us, but and it might just still be there. So right now, we're just doing the best we can, trying to help out as much as we can, and we're doing a lot of stuff in the community. We do homeless outreach programs and anything we can give back. And that was one thing I wanted to thank you guys for. I just wanted to say thank you for your service to the great state of Arizona, and you as well, because I know what it's like to serve. And so I just wanted to say thank you for that.
I think I know what it means, but I want you to tell me. I was reading, you know, when you mentioned your, I believe it was when you mentioned your gun rights, you said mm-hmm. that, but this goes across your entire application for. Upon you say you paid your debt to society and that you want to be a normal citizen. Mm-hmm. So what do you mean by that, sir?
Well, I believe I love this country, and I believe that this country was founded on the rights of its citizens. And that being said, I want to just go back to being, you know, a normal, productive citizen in the United States, which and what all that includes, you know, the right to bear arms, the right to vote, all those things that have been restored here. But the state of Nevada does not observe or honor the restoration of rights from another state. The only thing they will honor is a pardon from the governor's office, where the right to bear arms is considered.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. As I understand, the right to bear arms, that the state of Nevada does not, the fact that your rights have been restored here in the state of Arizona. Why is it so important for you to have the right to bear arms, sir? Because that's the one area that most persons who come for pardon from Nevada, that's the one thing that they're requesting. They want to have their gun rights. So why is that so important?
It is important just because I feel that once that has been granted to me, that I have, I don't want to say I arrived, but that I've done everything I need necessary to be, just to go back to a normal life. I grew up around guns. All my, all my uncles and cousins were all avid hunters. And I did all I grew up around, you know, guns, and I enjoy shooting them, and I enjoy owning them, and it's nice to have for, you know, this day and age, everything's getting a little crazy, but I would like to know that I could protect my family that way if needed be. That's not my number one reason. Another reason is also is in the state of Nevada, with a pardon, it would be possible for me to do prison ministry, which has been a very big call in my life as well, but I can't unfortunately do it.
You cannot do prison ministry in the state of Nevada?
Nope.
Despite the fact you have your
rights restored?
Rights restored. Mm-hmm. Okay. Is that anywhere, you know, and I guess I'm asking, we haven't had anyone about the prison rights before. We've had a number of individuals from Nevada to come over about the gun rights. But is that in stature there in Nevada, or is just legislature, governor, they've made that law in Nevada, as far as you know, sir?
As far as I know, it's more of a, they won't do it otherwise, but they'll, with the pardon, it gives them more leniency towards it. And it's not an open and shut case. They don't say, okay, you're pardoned, now you can just go, you know, do whatever you want in prison ministry. It's not about that. You still have to go through the full interview process, and there's some, you know, legalities I have to go, you know, and be, the court has to sign off on me to be able to do it.
Yes, sir.
If that makes any sense.
Yes, sir, it makes sense. I guess my next comment, question would be in the area of substance abuse. I take note that you've been clean for 16 years, but going back, you know, between 1995 and 2001, apparently you were using methamphetamine pretty heavy. So how did you wean off of methamphetamine, and how did you become clean for 16 years, sir?
Well, that was the morning of sentencing. The morning I was sentenced, and then I went to, you know, I don't know how everybody feels, and I'm not really asking, but, you know, Sheriff Joe, you know, I went to Tent City. That's where I was sentenced. So I did 4 months at Tent City, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me. You know, because it's not supposed to be a country club. It's supposed to make you reflect on, you know, what you did. And I remember sitting there, my family and everybody was at home, you know, with no way to pay bills, no way to feed themselves. And I was the provider, and I had no way to do that. And so I really felt convicted and, you know, condemned for being in there and being, you know, doing drugs, in my opinion, is a selfish act. It's, you know, you do it to numb pain, or you do it to, you're bored, whatever it may be. And so I felt very convicted, and that was the last time. So I felt at that time that was very anti-productive for me as a citizen, and me as a law-abiding citizen, and for my family. So that was it. Call the quits right then.
Let me just go back now, and then I'm going to turn it over to all the board members, but I'm going to go back to the original offenses themselves, and some offenses that I guess dates back to the late 1990s. Explain to us what they were, and how did you get involved in the criminal justice system, sir?
Oh, with these offenses?
Yes, sir.
What had happened was a friend of mine, it was a neighbor of mine, we both got into drugs together, and it became a way to feed our habit. And I remember it distinctively. I remember the day, it was kind of like there's a line, you know, there's a line where you don't cross. And I remember thinking to myself, okay, now once I cross this line, I can't go back. You know, and with what we were going to do, I think we stole a car or something stupid like that. And so, but I did it anyways. I crossed it, and I don't know why, but it was kind of exciting to me, to be truthful. Eventually, we got to the point where I had enough, and I know the police were looking for him, and I saw them pull up at his house one day, and he took, you know, they left looking for to serve a warrant, I believe, and so they took off around the corner, and I ran across the street, and they saw me, and so they came back around, and they stopped me. I said, yeah, we're, you know, we've been looking for you too. And I figured at that time that I'd had enough. And so I went in voluntarily for questioning, and I agreed to the things that I had done, and I just wanted to get past all that.
So how old were you at that time, sir?
What year was it? Did you say that was it?
96.
Yeah. So about 26.
26. And
27.
And did you steal anything aside from breaking into vehicles and with the thing with you getting that money from the state of Arizona? Did you do any other? Did you have any other criminal crimes on your record, sir?
No, I did once. I believe there was one on my record where a friend of mine had a motorcycle that was stolen that I really had no idea that it was, but I should have known better by him letting me ride it. You know, I got a new bike, and I was like, oh, let me ride it. And he's like, yeah, go ahead. And that should have been an inkling to me, but I remember I got pulled over on that, but those charges were all dismissed. But as far as stealing, you can ask my mom. The only thing I ever got caught, I think I was, what, 10, 12 or something? I shoplifted a Princess Leia figure, which I remember she saw me have, and she said, she's like, yeah, I know you didn't pay for that. So she marched us back to the Kmart, and I had to go talk to the manager and confess and tell him I was sorry. But I think that was it. And I remember how degrading that was and how wrong it felt. And so it was never, I never had another problem really with the law until, you know, I had a couple of driving off suspended license tickets, but.
So, just for the record, how much time did you serve? And by that I mean jail time, prison time, probation. How much time, or each of those, did you actually serve?
I served 4 months, 4 months in Tent City with the first 3 months was total lockdown. And then the last month I got out on work release program and was working, you know, full-time from there. And then after I got out, that's why I plea bargained to the 4 months. And then I got 4 years probation after that, which I was released 2 years. You know, I did half the time and they released me for good behavior. And then on the second offense, which was not too long after, you know, I got out. And so obviously my mind was still not in the right place by, you know, defrauding the government. But and then that came, and we had already moved to Nevada well by then. And then that all came up with an indictment.
And what was that about, sir? I mean, I read it, but what was it about?
From the state?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, well, I was working at the time.
Unemployment. That's what I call it, unemployment.
Unemployment, yes. I'd actually been laid off. And so and it was not too long, you know, after we finally got done with all that, and I was working pretty well, and then I got laid off. And so I started collecting unemployment, and then they started giving me, like, a job, you know, a day job here and there, where they'd call me and be like, oh, yeah, we need you to, you know, just come frame a wall or something like that. And so I said, okay. And then I knew that if I had claimed that, and I know, believe me, this is wrong thinking, but I knew that if I had claimed that, then they would give me a smaller amount and I wouldn't be able to pay my bills. So, dumb excuse.
Now, how long did you do that? I think you ended up with about $2,000, $2,000.
Yeah, I think it was probably 7 or 8 weeks. 7 or 8 weeks.
But you knew even at that time that you were doing something wrong. You were still on drugs at that time, right? I mean,
No.
You were off meth at that time.
Yep, I was sober a few years.
You were clean then.
Mm-hmm.
So why did you take advantage of it? Now you have become clean, and so why did you take advantage of it, sir?
I wish I could answer that. I really don't know.
Okay.
Looking back at it, I mean, yeah, that was the dumbest thing. Over for, you know, a few $1,000, and now, you know, that's going to follow me around forever, all because I, you know, I got a little greedy.
The only reason I ask that, you know, I could, I don't mean to stereotype by any means. I could somewhat understand it if you had been, you know, somewhere like 16, but by then you was 28, 29,
mm-hmm.
getting close to 30 years of age when you went and took the money, unemployment situation. And I was just wondering, you know, what was in the back of your mind that you would do that as a young adult.
I wish I could really answer that. I really don't know. There wasn't anything, you know, anything clear where I'm like, yeah, I really need to do this. And maybe I thought I wouldn't get caught. I don't know.
Okay, sir. Well, now I'm going to use my distinguished colleagues and see which of them might have some questions for you at this time, sir. None from the Honorable Mr. Johnson, the Honorable Mr. Kiwanis.
I think I did earlier, but along the way of your questioning, I think most of the questions were answered.
Okay. Honorable Mr. Neal.
No, I don't believe I have any questions.
Okay. You have your mother with you. Is she going to speak on your behalf today, or she?
I would love to if she did.
Okay, well, I mean, that's left up to her.
Right.
That's between the two of you. I cannot get into that one, but
right.
If you would be willing, just have a seat right here, sir.
Thank
where
you.
Your mother.
I just wanted to say one last quick thing.
Well,
to
you're going to have an opportunity
sure.
to say something else.
Okay.
Yes, sir. We're not going to stop you from talking, no, sir. Good afternoon, ma'am.
Good afternoon.
And thanks for your patience today. And what is your name, please, ma'am?
My name is Sandra Landles.
Yes, ma'am, and welcome to the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency.
Thank you, and it has been very entertaining today. So, I don't have anything prepared, but I do want you to know that And I wrote a letter too, but Nick was a wonderful child. And somewhere along the line, when he got into his late teens, he lost his way. He moved away from me, so I was unaware of a lot of this, but when he finally, we were the ones, my husband and I, that, you know, when he was in jail, he called and wanted money, and we finally had to put our foot down because we had always bailed him out before, you know. And there's a point in time where they have to start learning what's right and what's wrong. But, and that was probably the best thing that we ever did for him. And after that, his life since he has found God, he is the most wonderful man I know. He brought me back to Jesus, and my life has been so fulfilled since then. And I wouldn't have been able to do it without him. And I'm just very grateful that God has given us a chance, another chance, to be close. And I just want to thank you for taking the time to listen to him. He is a very good man. He doesn't drink, he doesn't smoke, and he really is in love with God. And I think by giving him his rights, I'm a gun owner. I carry a gun everywhere. I'm really surprised I remembered to take it out of my purse today. So, but it's just, it's a feeling, you know, a right. And I understand where he's coming from. And I'll never use mine. I mean, I hope I don't, but I have one if I need to. And I think that's all he's asking for, too, is just to be able to. But I want you to know, I love him very much, and he is one wonderful man.
So you live here in Arizona?
I do. Okay. I live in Wickenburg.
That's where you can carry the gun. Okay.
Yes.
No, I say this, and I just don't say it to your son, but I say it to some others who come from Nevada. I'll just move back to Arizona. You need the types of
money. I love that. That'd be good. Oh, maybe you can say no.
You planted a church in Arizona.
Yes, I put that one on the record.
Yes, that is his fault.
Okay, any questions at this time? Well, we don't have any questions.
I have a question, and again, I don't want to go on and on here, but I think this is one of those cases that really speaks a lot about gateway mentality when people are young, that once they cross a line, it becomes that much easier to cross the next line. And you know, I've gotten into these philosophical discussions with people, but it really is kind of crossing that criminal brink, you know, because you can say, what about smoking cigarettes? Well, yeah, I think in the mind of most people, even if they're smoking under 18, they know it's fundamentally not something they're going to get arrested for, or going 10 miles over the speed limit or whatever. But there's that line crossing, and I can kind of really see it in this story. You know, it's not the answer for everything. I mean, I know all these cases are individual, but I can see that, and I can see where you've arrived now, and I really commend you for that.
Thank you.
So, thank you.
Yeah, I agree. It's sorry.
Well, you have to come up here.
Yes. Yeah, pardon me.
You have to come up here to talk.
Yes, I'm sorry.
I mean, that's just our procedure here.
This is a recording. Excuse me. So, I was just saying, I agree with you 100%, and I remember it very clearly, that threshold I crossed, and I remember that it was a change in me. I felt a change where, you know the difference between right and wrong, and then when you cross that line, it just kind of fades away. And it was a really empty feeling, but, praise the Lord, I reeled myself back in. But it took, going through the judicial system and, you know, standing before you guys now that has made me realize. And also we've, I don't know if it's in the report, my wife and I have adopted two of our grandchildren.
Yes, so that's
and,
in the report.
So
yes,
we're making sure, that they're a little too young to know, to know Grandpa's story right now. But, in time, when they get to old enough, I'll share that story with them. I know, I've, done some bad things in the past, and that I've reconciled a lot of that. But we want to just pass that on to And not just our own children, but all the kids we come in contact. My wife is a preschool director at the same church, at the school there, but it's a huge school, and so we get to, you know, minister to children too. And, you know, like I said, without going into too much detail, we just kind of tell them, you know, the story of right and wrong, and where it can lead if they with bad behavior, so.
Let me just ask one other question, and then I think I will exhaust it, man. As you know, as I've stated before, the board has, if the board sees fit, it would have to make a recommendation to the governor. And one of the things that I look for, and I believe some other board members as well, is that, and I know that you've done so well, and I commend you for it, but what could we tell the governor that would make you exceptional? I always look for something that we can say. If we're going to say something to the governor, it has to be something that's exceptional, not what the average person can do. And I know that you've done some great things. I commend you for them, but right now I'm looking for that. Those areas that you have really exceeded in, that we, if this board saw fit, that it would transmit to the governor, sir.
I really feel that my plan is to, is if this goes forward and I get the pardon, or whether I do or don't, I'm still going to use it, but to let you, you know, to let people know in the future that I minister to or speak with, that anything is possible. It's possible to go from, because a lot of kids I've met that are, you know, getting in trouble with the law and stuff like that, they think that that's their life. They believe that's their life. They believe there's no way out. You know, they're, oh, well, I'm stuck in this, or I was born to this, or I've heard so many stories, and I want to show my life to be, a shining example of what is possible. You don't have to stay like that. You can get out. You can become a productive and you can be anything you want to be. You know, God bless the United States.
Good start. We're coming towards the end of your hearing, unless there are some further questions from board members, but this is your hearing, as you've heard us say several times today with others. You have the last word, so anything else you want to tell the board before the board goes into discussion and makes its determination, sir?
Yes, one final thing is just as we were talking, and I enjoyed sitting in here, you know, watching the proceedings and how everything went through, and with each case, it just kept reminding me of, man, I'm so glad I'm not there anymore, because I remember being on the other end of it, and it's been so nice to be on this side of it, and it just reminded me of where I was and where I am now, and so I'm just very thankful, and so I thank you all for taking the time to listen to me and hear my testimony.
Thank you so very much, and just have a seat up here, sir.
Thank you very much.
And you can go back there with your mother, but you can just sit up here. You can sit up here, yes, sir, because we're going to ask you to come back regardless of what decision the board makes. Okay. At this time, the board is going into discussion. We're going to ask that you remain quiet along with your mother. It may sound like we're talking to the two of you, but we're not. We're just talking among ourselves at this time. And following this discussion, the board will make its determination. As you know, according to the open meeting laws in the state of Arizona, we do everything in public. We don't do anything behind closed doors. We don't go into closets or into jury rooms or nothing of that nature. We do it just sitting right here, and that's what we're about to do as it relates to your situation. And again, I want to thank you so very much for coming. I think that, as I've stated in other ways, I think that is an exceptional person. I think that, however, this board has to search its hearts to say, well, now, what can we say if this board saw fit to move him, to make a recommendation to the governor? What could we say, you know, aside from him being a great minister, a great assistant pastor, a great leader who's made a great deal of progress? And that, I'm still searching for it, but I know that my distinguished colleagues have given more thought to it than I have. So I'm going to yield to my distinguished colleagues at this time for any statements that they would like to discussion. I'm sorry, I have to say it the right way, otherwise we get in trouble. Any discussions that they would like to have at this time? Anybody want to discuss this at all? The Honorable Mr. Johnson.
Dr. Hart, I think that Mr. Durham has done some outstanding things. You know, he made us the comment that he wants to live his life as an example and a I think the greatest example of his life that he could live is that he did become a minister. He's been blessed to be able to be a minister. He's been blessed to, you know, have his wife, his mom, and he's adopted his grandkids to do it. But I think the biggest blessing he has is being able to tell their story, because we see so many people that come before us that have been on the meth and different drugs, and, you know, not able to bring themselves back around. But certainly, Mr. Durham has found a way to bring himself back around, and then to share that story, I think, is his biggest blessing that he has, that he's able to share and talk to people about that. Because there's so many people out there that needs that counseling or ministered to in that way, so that they can get that information. He's, you know, made a statement about wanting to feel whole, but I think that he is whole. You know, he's whole at this time. He's whole with his mom, his family, and he's had the opportunity to go back and get together with them. His mom stated that she didn't know that these things were going on. He had moved away, but, you know, he even brought his mom. You know, he said, mom says he brought her back to God, you know. So I think that he's living a whole life. His life is whole. It's just that there's a problem in the state of Nevada. But as far as Arizona goes and many other states, you know, he has that that right. And I don't think there's an extenuating circumstance, you know, because the governor is the governor of the state of Arizona, and, you know, those rights have been restored here. He's gone through the process to have his rights, his voting rights restored, and all those things done. So I think that I don't see the extenuating circumstances that to recommend it to the governor. However, I just want to say that I think that Mr. Durham is one of life's examples, and he is living a whole life. His life's whole with what he's able to do and being able to stand up here and talk. And I think that, you know, having that opportunity, although he's been here all day with us, you know, he made a comment, you know, it kind of reminds him to be on the other side of where you could be, and how drugs have impacted so many other people's lives and what they're doing. I think that, you know, I just, you know, there's a plan for all of us. And I think he's living the plan that's been set out there for him at this time. And I guess I'll just leave it right there.
Thank you so much, Honorable Mr. Kowanis.
Well, I think on the practical side, and I wrangle over this, that when we're confronted with a pardon application, that it really comes down to being able to find the language to justify a pardon that rises to the level of the governor's signature. And what I'm thinking right now, because I want to be really respectful of what Mr. Durham has accomplished with his life, especially considering his journey and where he's at now, is if I had to grade this, I'd say he gets an A, but to rise to the level of finding the justification for a governor's signature for pardon, it's like an A plus. I mean, it really has to be a above and beyond. And then there's still the question as to whether or not they'll sign it anyway, not to be harsh. So I'm torn between wanting to really commend this individual for everything he's accomplished, but at the same time point out that it's very few pardons that get signed in the state of Arizona. And I think you said something earlier on that caught my attention, which is in this case, I think it has a lot more to do with Nevada not respecting gun rights than the necessity for pardon. I recognize that's the situation in Nevada, so again, it's not to be dismissive of his desire to bear arms. But I don't know if we can justify it to the level of a pardon. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Honorable Mr. Neal, sir.
Yes, sir. I was reading through the criminal history here, and I used to have to do this all the time when I worked, sort this out. There's a whole lot of things here showing court dismissal, which I'm sure, irregardless of the arrest or anything, any state's going to say, okay, it's dismissed, so it didn't really happen. And it's showing the vacated civil rights restored on a case from, let's see, this is like 1999, but when you go down here to this, the case from addressed on December 15th, 2006. There's five or six charges there, and most of them are shown in court dismissal, but charge number one, count number one, shows a disposition of guilty as a felony. That may be why they won't give you gun rights rather than the case that you've already had restored on. Because it's, regardless of what happened, this record is showing that it's there's a you know, guilty disposition, it's guilty charge for a felony, and that's the only thing on it. All the vacated and civil rights restored were from a case, five, six years before that. So, I mean, with that on there, I couldn't recommend it moving forward this time. It may just be a paperwork issue, but I'm still seeing a guilty disposition where civil rights aren't restored or anything else like that is on a felony. So I think that's the issue with Nevada. I do agree that looking at the issues about gun rights in Nevada isn't, in my opinion, high enough up the ladder to recommend forward to the governor. It's just not, one of those exceptional reasons.
Thank you so much, Mr. Neal. Further discussion by board members? If not, I'm going to move forward, and I will, after I make just a brief comment, I'm going to make a motion, and then we can always make a counter motion, whatever motion is made. I think that, to be sure, I think we all are impressed, I believe, based on what we've heard, with the progress that Mr. Duren, Minister Duren, Reverend Duren, has made. I think that we find ourselves in a dilemma. I find myself in a dilemma because each one of them thinks independent of each other. I mean, sometimes we get up here and we thoroughly debate and disagree with each other. But I think that I'm still looking for that real exception that we could say to the governor. And, as an individual, I think Mr. Kiwanis stated it quite well. Yes, A-plus as an individual. But what can we say to the governor? Because the governor does not issue that many pardons. Last two governors have not, and I don't know about those before the current governor and the most recent governor before the current governor, but they're just not, they're hard to get, and I'm just not at this time willing to put my name on a signature. Therefore, I'm going to move at this time and see where it goes, and if it goes, it goes. If it does not, I don't feel bad not to recommend to the governor for a pardon. That's my motion, but we'll see where it goes.
Second.
Second, Mr. Kiwanis. Another paperwork here. Mr. Kiwanis. Agreed by Mr. Johnson and Honorable Mr. Neal. Sir, I hope you don't take this as being a negative on the part of this
panel.
We made this decision because we recognize, what the progress that you made. And as one, and I'm going to say it now, I did not say it while during the hearing itself, but I think someone else said it much better than I said. Maybe you will start to plant some churches right here in the state of Arizona. So maybe that will. Maybe this will be a challenge for you to play some to plant some churches here in Arizona. But please don't look at this as being a negative. This is just where we are at this particular time. We wish you the best and congratulations on all that you've done. And we hope that you have a great Christmas season and continue to work with those kids and continue to work with that church and those schools, that school up there in Henderson, Arizona. And thank you so very much, sir. And your hearing is over.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.